It was disgusting, but hey, it was mine. The boots and the socks I'd been wearing last night were in it, and I snagged them too. Outside, it was a late afternoon, and streets and highways would soon be crowded with commuters going home from work. Tara had rented a beat-up old car, probably from an independent rental business, rather than from one of those major chains. Good move on her part. It would draw things out while the police methodically went through agency after agency looking for someone of her description, and they always started with the big places first. I studied her as she got in the car. She was tall and lean and pretty in a knife-edge sort of way. Her eyes moved around constantly, not nervously or randomly, but with the cool precision of someone making herself aware with everything surrounding her at all times. Her hands were scarred, long-fingered, and strong. The bruise on her head, where I had smacked her with my blasting rod the night before, no, two nights before, I had lost a day sleeping in the hotel room, was probably hurting like hell, but she didn't seem to notice it. She drove us out into the streets of East Chicago, one of the distant suburbs of the big city, down at the south end of Lake Michigan, finally turning off into a quiet drive beside a sign that read, Wolf Lake Park. Tara West made me nervous. She'd appeared from nowhere to save me from the back of a police car, but what were her intentions? Was she really trying to help her fiancé keep from falling victim to his family curse again? Or were the two of them working together to remove anyone who could rebuild the magical circle that could contain McFinn and render him harmless? That would make sense, given that once Kim Delaney was dead, they came after me. On the other hand, that didn't fit with a lot of other facts. McFinn, if he truly was a loup garou, changed into a beast only during the nights of the full moon. At least half a dozen people had been killed when the moon was waxing full, but not yet all the way there, or after it had been full for three nights already and was waning back toward half full again. And Tara West wasn't a werewolf. A werewolf was a human being who used magic to turn into a wolf. She had looked upon my eyes and not been drawn in. Therefore, she wasn't a human being. Could she be some kind of shapeshifter from the Never Never? McFinn's partner in crime, killing on the off nights to keep suspicion from falling on him? Some sort of being with which I was unfamiliar? Most of my background on the paranormal was Western European in origin. I should have been reading more books on Native American beliefs, South American spooks and haunts, African legend, East Asian folklore. But it was a little late for such regrets. If Tara West was a monster and wanted me dead, she could have killed me already, and she surely would not have bothered to clean and dress my injury. Of course, that begged the question, what did she really want? And that question led the way to many more. Who were the young people I had seen her with the first evening? What was she doing with them? Did she have some kind of cult of followers, like vampires sometimes build up? Or was it something else entirely? Tara pulled onto a little gravel lane, drove a quarter mile up it, and pulled off into the weeds. Get out, she said. He will be here, somewhere. The bouncing car ride had come to an end, mercifully, and the sun was still solidly above the horizon, with moonrise not for at least an hour after sunset. So I ignored the pain and pushed my way out of the car to follow her into the woods. It was darker underneath the ancient oaks and sycamores, and quiet. Birdsong came to us from far away, as though the birds were choosing the better part of valor and remaining where the sun could still touch the tree branches. The wind sighed through the woods, sending leaves spinning in all shapes of gold and orange and russet, adding to the thick, crunchy carpeting under our feet. Our steps sounded out distinctly as we moved ahead through the leaves, and the cool wind made me grateful I had thought to drape my duster over my shoulders. I studied the usually quiet Tara. She was walking with exaggerated motions, planting her feet down solidly with each step, as though intentionally trying to make noise. Once or twice, she stepped out of her way to tread on a branch, snapping it with a dry popping sound. I was too tired and sore to go to any such effort. I just walked, and it made more noise than she did. Who says I can't do anything right? We hadn't gone more than a few hundred yards when Tara abruptly tensed, crouching, her eyes scanning all around. There was a whistling sound, and then a bent sapling jerked upright, dragging a noose around Tara's ankle and hauling her across the rock and leaf-covered floor of the woods with a yelp of surprise. I blinked at her, and something came out of the leaves, rose right up like Hamlet's dad from the stage floor. But instead of bemoaning his fate and charging me with avenging him, he slugged me across the jaw, on the same side of my face that already sported dark purple bruises, and sent me spinning to the ground, stunned. I landed badly, but on my unwounded side, and rolled out of the way as a muddy, naked foot stomped down at my head. I grabbed onto it and jerked with more desperation than strength, and the foot's owner fell down beside me. Instead of being slowed, he slapped his arms at the ground as he hit it, in much the same way Murphy did when practicing falls. Then he rolled as I struggled to my hands and knees and slid a hard, strong forearm beneath my throat, locking it there with the other hand and pressing back against my windpipe. "Got you. I got you," snarled my attacker. I struggled against him, but he was bigger than me, stronger than me. He had me down. And he hadn't been shot or beaten up anywhere near as often as I had been in the last 15 hours or so. I didn't stand a chance.